everybody. Welcome to episode 12 of Coalition Victory. It's good to be back. I'm your host, John Walls, and I have with me today some of the members of Team Victory, as usual. Tonight we have Ford with us.
Hi, all.
And Jamie's here tonight.
Yay, we're back.
We are back. Back again. Yeah, we were gone for a little while playing Journey into Nyx, the new set. I'm assuming that's what we've all been doing, magic-wise?
Well, and, you know, dying and coming back from the dead, but that might just be me. That's why
you have one of those nice death masks, then? Are you no longer Ford? Are you just nameless zombie number one?
No, now I'm Brad.
Jamie, have you been playing some Journey into Nyx?
I have only been playing Journey into Nyx. We've had 2 weekends since we've been gone, so we had the pre-release weekend and then the pseudo-release weekend because our store had free comic book day, so we didn't get the full experience.
Every store had free comic book day.
Well, I'm sure there are some non-comic book stores that host Magic tournaments out there who did not have free comic book day.
That's right, Kitty.
See my categories. Brim-ass.
It's Brim-ass. You should name your next cat Brim-ass, by the way.
That'd be a sweet name for a cat.
That would be the sweet name for the cat, but then he would pop out more cats, and I would just die to cats. Does not sound like a good plan.
Could name him a Johnny.
Would he search for more Johnnies or people?
I believe it's a May, so you can...
Would he just bring people to my house?
He would also bring land, so, right?
I do not need a forest sprouting up in my kitchen.
Better than a swamp.
Or, you know, you could get the Johnny Vidget, which has the lightning helix attached to it.
Anyway. As you can tell, we've played lots of Journey into Nyx.
Or are we just like cats?
Yeah, we like cats. Who doesn't? So, Johnny's good. I haven't gotten a chance to play with him. I opened him up in one of my boxes. I didn't open up anything too interesting, but I know Jamie opened up something really interesting. And yeah. I wanted to get his story about that. So
I went 4-0 during our first pre-release sealed pod, and so I won, I think, 7-ish packs. Our store was actually letting us take store credit this time, which they don't usually do for the pre-release events. And I usually always take store credit because the pack value is usually pretty crappy, especially for Born of the Gods. But don't want to get too far off topic. So I was debating, holding my 7-pack, should I trade in for store credit or should I start opening them? And our friend Kevin opened one next to me, and I think he opened a Mana Confluence or something good, so he just stopped. And Toop started opening packs too, and he went through, I think, all of them and didn't find anything particularly good. And so I was like, what the hell, I'll just start opening packs, and wasn't finding anything good. I opened up one of my packs, and I saw a Mythic on top, and I totally forgot, like, why would there be a Mythic on top? I'm like, this is weird, the pack's backwards. And then it hit me. All the cards were Mythics. So I happened to find the God Pack with all 15 gods, which was quite exciting. I think it was the only one in our store.
So far.
Yeah, it was the only one that I had actually heard about in person. I know the internet was all abuzz about these. They kind of got spoiled pretty quickly into the pre-release weekend. It was all over Reddit and stuff, but it's cool that it's true. You know, it's not something people were just making up. We got to see it in person. It was kind of cool. We took some pictures and posted it on the Twitter, so that was kind of fun.
Someone owes us money for drinks because of that.
Yeah, somebody does.
Yeah, as long as we don't go to that pizza place with $10 beers. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Journey into Nyx, otherwise, has been pretty fun so far. We'll talk about the pre-release a little bit later. But first, this past weekend was the first time that it was legal in Standard, which is what a lot of us have kind of been waiting for. We've been brewing with it since we started seeing the spoilers. Star City had the Standard Tournament, Standard Open, in Cincinnati this weekend, and it was won by Andrew Tendrum, playing a black-green devotion deck. And after looking at the list, it's not really... I mean, it is black-green, but it's really just a black devotion deck. with a pretty heavy, not really heavy splash, but a splash for green for some better spells, including cards like Vraska, Abrupt Decay, and I think Golgari Charm out of the sideboard. So other than the new black-green temple, it didn't look like there was much for that deck that came from the new set.
No, that temple does pretty much make that entire strategy possible, though, or more effective.
Yeah, it seemed to kind of tie everything together. I know not just the black-green land, but the inclusion of the blue-red, I believe the blue-red land.
Inspiration, right? Temple of Inspiration.
Yeah, it gave kind of birth to a new control deck. So we've been seeing blue-white for quite some time, and then, versions of that, Esper, since we've had the blue-black and white-black lands for I think, since the beginning of the set, or rather the block. So we saw this past weekend there was a blue-white-red control deck with the new Oblivion Ring and Keranos and the new Scryland, of course. Other than, those decks, the top eight here is looking really diverse. I don't think any of them were duplicates. No, well, none of them were duplicates. Similar. They're very similar.
None were real duplicates. I am sorry I did not get to see if anyone was playing the one-drop Hypnotic Siren. Is that the one?
Mm-hmm.
That can also be Mind Control later. I would think that would... I would hope that works good in the mono-blue deck. Replacing the Owl. What's the...
Judge's Familiar.
Judge's Familiar.
Why do I want to say Judge's Verdict? But, replacing that one, at least for a couple of them, because it just gives it a better late, or improved late game that deck already had. A solid late game with Thassa make anything big unblockable style, but it helps it a little bit.
Yeah, I played blue for a while at the very beginning of Theros block. After that initial Pro Tour, seeing blue, I was kind of attached to that deck for a while. As of late, I don't think it's very good. Some of the people on our team kind of beg to differ, but I don't want to test that out. I kind of want to test out another one of the decks that top aided. I think it took third. A junk deck by Jeff Hoogland, and he is kind of known for his kind of off-the-wall builds. I know he was running a bug list in the last set, and I ran that for a couple weeks, and that was really, really fun. So he kind of took that idea and used some of the new lands, specifically Mana Confluence and then the Black-Green Temple, to allow him to play Junk, which looks like Jund from Last Standard. It's just a ton of, super good rares and super good mythics, jammed them all together and put the mana together to hold it, as well as having, Hero's Downfall and Abrupt Decay, which is a great removal package.
Yep. Those work well together. I at least for a little bit in next week or two, we'll probably be sticking with black-white midrange, tweaking the sideboard only really, adding maybe a copy of Atheros instead of one of Erebos for the control matchup. As much as Atheros, I like Atheros a lot, but I don't think it's the deck's been made for it to be main deckable yet. As much as we saw, I think it was in the first matchup, there was that white-black aggro start that had both Atheros and Godsend.
No.
In it.
I don't know how I feel about Godsend, though. I got to play a little bit with it at the pre-release, and it's really slow. Even in pre-release, it was kind of slow. So I could see it being a lot slower in standard, especially when there's a ton of removal.
Right, yeah. And I mean, I'm iffy on Godsend right now. I don't think... I mean, it's just... It's not what the... A lot of people, was it Volshock something that it's been compared to?
Volshock Battle Gear.
Battle Gear, it's better than that, but...
It literally is not.
Okay, I don't see
if
how you...
If you would not play Volshock Battle Gear, you would not play this. Like, it's really the same question, because of the same points you guys brought up. In a creature matchup, it's going to be awesome if your opponent cannot deal with it. Like, if two aggro decks are bashing heads up against each other... if you can survive their initial onslaught and you can put that on your creature and pay the equip cost twice per turn, you get one unblockable attacker and one ridiculous defender who just sits there on the ground and they can't attack through. Otherwise, like, you're going to pay 3 mana, put it on your creature, someone's going to remove that creature, or just let it hit them. Like, it doesn't do that much damage that you can't, like, play around it, like, with other cards. I don't think it's that good right now as a main deck card. I can see it, like I said, in the creature matchup. As long as your opponent doesn't have anything that flies over your creatures, like, a lot of decks can just ignore it and go to the skies with things like the Demon, the Archangel,
Stormbreath
Dragon. So I think it's a lot like John said, it's a little bit too slow, and I feel like it can be ignored in a lot of the matchups because I don't think it actually adds that much damage.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. That might be too slow right now, especially with all the removal running around. It is better than Volshock Battle Gear, at very least, just because it's the same thing plus an ability. So,
I mean, like, a lot of cards have extra text that make it technically better, but the point people are trying to make is it fits in the same role, basically, and that's why it's a bit of a problem. It doesn't give enough power, I think, to make it playable in all matchups. I think it's a matchup specific card.
I agree, it's matchup specific, and right now there aren't even that many decks for it in the matchup specific. Just because, like you were saying, there are a lot of decks that have the evasive or flying creatures that can just ignore.
Yeah, so for the people who have not seen or played with Godsend, it's a 3 mana equipment. I think it's 1 and double white. The equipped creature only gets 3/3. So, like Jamie was saying, it's not that much. And the ability that we're talking about is that whenever the creature that it's equipped to is either blocked or blocks, you can exile one of the creatures that's either blocking or blocked by it, and then your opponents cannot cast cards that have that same name. And the equip cost is 3, so that's kind of what we've been referring to, is it's a little pricey. You know, normally with equipment, you're trying to play it and get value of it, you know, that very next turn, or rather the same turn that you kind of drop it down. So it's a little slow in that sense, at being more or less a 6-drop. So
one important point for the favor of this card is that its ability does not trigger. So it does help you get through things like Blood Baron that a lot of white decks would not be able to get through otherwise.
Yeah.
So there may be some utility there in the card. Like, they can block with their Blood Baron, but it doesn't matter because the thing still exiles it before it gains life or kills the creature, I believe. I know it doesn't target, and I think it does it before damage, right?
Yeah, it's whenever it's blocked or becomes blocked.
So it does allow you to get through on Blood Baron if you're a white deck, which obviously you probably will be if you're running it. So, I mean, it does. Like, I'm not completely negative on the card. I don't think it's good right in the current standard format right now.
We'll see.
But that could change.
Yeah, we'll see as standard goes forward.
Yeah, I mean, isn't there a Pro Tour coming up in a little bit?
Yeah, I believe it's block constructed though.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
It won't be that helpful for standard, unfortunately, then.
It'll be good for rotation. It'll let us see what, you know, we should keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's kind of like a preview of the future of what cards will be useful after rotation. I'm really excited about this junk deck, though. It's like a cross between Black White and Jund. Like, it's like if you put the two decks together. It is playing, like John was saying, it is playing a lot of rares and mythics that are powerful, but it's not doing it in the way that Jund did, where Jund was literally like 4 of all the best cards and just kill your opponent. This is literally like 2s and 3s of like all the best cards. And the reason why you can get away with that is because you have a Johnny and Underworld Connections, so that you can play all the answers you need and just go find them. Like, I really like that. It's almost more like a toolbox deck. Not in the fact, like, it's not as great as Birthing Pod, but still, Ajani and Underworld Connections do some work in this deck.
And I think
to allow you to play a lot of 1s and 2s of good answers to things in the format.
Yeah, and I think which kind of helps that out is like Jimmy said, the Underworld connections coupled with the four of Corsair of Crucifix. You don't really think about it with Corsair of Crucifix, but the ability to smooth out your draws by getting land off the top of your deck and then drawing cards away with Underworld connections, having that coupled with Ajani is really, really strong. I know when I was playing the Bug deck a little while ago, Corsair and Underworld connections, it feels like you're playing a different game of Magic. Just the amount of manipulation you have at the top of your deck with those, as well as the scry lands, it's just crazy how fast you can actually dig for answers. Yeah. So I'm really, really looking forward to trying this deck out.
I just like seeing this amount of deck manipulation that's not in the blue color.
Yeah. Also in standard.
Fair enough.
Yeah. The temples, just knowing when to play your scry lands by knowing the top of your deck, and like knowing to play the land off, scry the land away. You know, you have so many choices and options every turn, in theory. So it's a lot of fun, and it has a really good sideboard, and the mana does not seem horrible. So we'll see. We'll see. It seems insanely fun. I'm excited to start testing it and actually get like ahead of time this time. But then last standard, I was behind on Jund. I found out like at the end that like Jund is like the exact deck I love to play, like right at the end of standard, because I was playing Junk Reanimator for so long. So hoping to get on the train early this time.
Yeah, so that's pretty much going to wrap it up for us for Standard. I know Cincinnati also had Legacy, as usual. That ended up being won by Death and Taxes. And then I think there were three Delver decks in the top eight. Pretty standard-looking Legacy top eight, nothing crazy. There was a Reanimator deck and Elves, so there's still some combo. But we are seeing it being more creature-based combo.
So. Sneak and Show, too.
Yes. Oh, I didn't see that at the very end.
Sneak and Show.
And then you've got your Delvers.
Three Delverish decks.
And Deathblade.
One Deathblade. Yeah. So
yeah.
Ooh, we even have a Storm deck, Ant, at 11th, too. That's pretty cool.
I didn't look past that.
I like to look at all of them down to see what else is being played, at least.
Oh, Andrew Tendrum, the guy who won the Standard Open, took 15th in the Legacy Open. And a little bit one down after him is Joe Lissette with his Blue, White, Red Miracle deck. That guy is really good at that deck. And I could talk about that deck for a while, but that's not really what we're here to do tonight, because we're playing so much with Journey into Nyx. Legacy hasn't been affected too much by it, if at all. I know the winning Death and Taxes list had a couple from Born of the Gods, but nothing from the new set from what I could tell.
Brimaz. Wow. There's a Brimaz in Death and Taxes.
And Spirit of Labyrinth.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. The new cards, in Standard, we've seen the lands kind of helping everything out. I want to touch a little bit on the pre-release, and rather what we've seen from the limited environment. So our pre-releases, like everybody else's, were sealed, where you get the one seeded pack. How did you guys think that this, this limited environment is now that the full block is here?
Well, I think I have to say I like it a little bit more right now. Not completely sure why, but I do like that Monstrosity is back, and there's a few more options for it now, though not any as good as like Nessie and Asp was, obviously, in the Theros block, but it was probably one of my favorite mechanics from the set in general, so having it brought back makes me like the format, getting to try a couple new the Monstrosity cards out is fun. I think there's probably a little bit more balance also between the colors than there was with just Theros and Born of the Gods, though I still think green is probably insanely strong.
I think white is really strong. I know. Ooh. I know.
I feel like the heroic has though lost some of the just sheer number of target, or like the, I guess not lost the number, but lost the concentration of targets you would get.
Exactly. That's what I was gonna say. Is white seems stronger. Some of the cards in this new set are really good. I know the promo card for white for the pre-release, I think it was Dawnbringer Chariots. It's like a 2/4 lifelink flying three. Heroic.
Yeah, up.
That card is really, really good.
I feel like this is a Pokemon evolution chain. We went from like a Croen
Skyguard
1/1 Skyguard up to get your 2/2 Windsteed Rider, and then all of a sudden now you're riding on a Chariot and you're 2/4 flying with lifelink already there. You know, it's it's yeah, the thing is ridiculous. That won me a lot of games in the pre-release.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna say this: every time I played it, it got killed like that same turn.
It has to, or you lose the game to it.
See, you're not doing it right, Ford. You don't play it on 4 ever.
You play it on 5 with God's Willing backup.
Yeah, God's Willing or Johnny's Presence, which. Good Lord, Johnny's Presence is a ridiculously powerful card, and I did a draft with the whole block, and they're so easy to pick up. Like, I think I picked up 2 in a God's Willing. My deck was ridiculous.
Wait, no, Johnny's Presence is the +1/+1 indestructible and strive, right?
Yeah,
that is correct. That card is legitimately not being taken very highly, I think, at our drafts, and I don't understand why. It's such a good card.
I really liked it. I really liked Strive as a mechanic.
Yeah, it felt, I have to agree with.
It felt so natural. It was kind of going back to what Magic has had for a long time with Kicker and Kicker-type abilities. We saw it a little bit with Bestow in Theros. It's kind of a – it's not really a trap, but it's something that teaches players just kind of pacing and when certain cards are good in certain situations. If you have, you know, your Bestow creature, that's a 2-drop, but you have, say, a heroic guy and the Bestow is like 6 or 7, do you want to use that card early as a creature on board to put pressure or to block, or do you want to save it, you know, later when it's going to have a little bit more impact on the board and on the game? And that's kind of carried through in this set with some of the Bestow cards, specifically Hypnotic Siren, 1/1 flyer for 1, super boring. But the Bestow, I want to say, is 7, and it you know, gain control of the creature it's bestowed to, so you can steal your opponent's creatures. Strive is just the exact same thing of, do you want to play it early to save one of your creatures, or do you want to let that creature die and save Strive a little bit later when you have more of a board presence or creatures that are a little bit bigger that might benefit more from the indestructibility? Do you want to use it as a combat trick early to get the +1? To kind of trade or survive from a trade. It's so good. I had a blast.
I really don't think there's much of a debate over how to play your Hypnotic Siren. I agree with your concept in general.
I had people beating me in the face with it.
I don't see you ever dropping a Hypnotic Spectre on 1. Unless you know your deck has like no way to get to 7 mana.
I had an opponent who had one, and they were able... They had... things that would recur. What was it? I'm gonna look it up really quick. It brings a creature with certain CMC back from the graveyard.
Oh yeah, the Tethemis Cat Monk. 2,
yeah, the
3
cat.
For 3, heroic. Bring a creature with converted mana cost 2 or less directly to the battlefield. That card is also broken. And no, it's another white card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think in that situation, the opponent was using it as a blocker and had the battle cat to be able to recur it back into play. And it was a flying blocker if that, you know, and like you were saying, if they couldn't get to the 7 mana, if they were going to die before that, definitely a recurring 1/1 flyer is a lot better than just being dead with a 7 mana control creature.
The option, but like just thinking about it in 90% of the cases, I feel like, you're going to want to save that as a 7 mana, I win the game card, instead of a 1 mana, get in a little early damage. Unless, of course, like I said, there's going to be cases where you're like, you get that one ordeal and you're like, turn 1, turn 2, that will just win me a game. Why don't I just go for it now instead of waiting till 7 mana?
Yeah, speaking of another 7 mana limited I win the game card, Hour of Need. That is the 3 mana, or 2 and a blue mana with Strive for 1 and a blue, and you exile the target creatures and they become 4/4 Sphinxes.
With flying, yeah. That card's busted.
For 7 mana, you can do that to 3 creatures and basically just block and then swing back for 12. Mm-hmm. So
I had that happen to me a couple times.
How about a nice way to win the game out of nowhere?
I was lucky enough to dodge this card. I've had it played against me a couple times, and all times I won those games. I put it is a card that can do those ridiculous things you said. The problem is like sometimes you just have to use it to stay alive, and I think I just happened to get pretty lucky to have like the combat tricks to avoid it. But yeah, this card is very scary. Very, very scary. The only negative of it is it does actually make tokens, so you have to watch out for the abundance of bounce in the format, especially since Journey added a new blue bounce spell, which is really, really powerful.
Hubris.
Interesting story about Hubris. I was doing my, you know, first set draft. Hubris was my gift 15th card out of a pack.
What?
Why?
I know. I was like, I have watched, you know, and read people doing drafts and saying that this is, in some instances, a first pick card. And it just came back to me as my 15th card. And I was like, yep, I'm in the right colors. People don't know what's going on at this table. So, yeah, like I think that's one of the cards that people, I don't know, for whatever reason, maybe because it's not Griptide and it's not Voyage's End. I mean, they think because it returns the auras back to the hand with it that it's not as good.
No, nope, still really good.
Actually, it's sometimes it's a lot better, too, because I've seen a lot of people use this as, you know, target their creature, return your creature plus the bestow things right back to your hand so that you can re-bestow them. And, you know, you save two cards with one card. So there's some really good defensive capabilities of this card, too. It's not just save yourself from taking damage from opponent's creatures. It can save your creatures, especially things like that Chariot, which you might have bestowed upon. I mean, if that's the card that is ridiculous, you're going to want it back.
Can it also, like, wouldn't it also return your ordeals, right, in case there's...
It would. It returns any auras. Unfortunately, a lot of times, in fact, while having this in my hand, my opponents bestowed some creatures, and, like, I realized that, like, well, I could bounce it for a turn, but it gives them back both the creature and the aura. And, like, you'd probably go put it on another target or, like, just some awkward situations where it was not good to bounce their creature.
Yeah.
Like, you can reset counters with it, but there was times where I was like, this is actually not going to be helpful to bounce his creature and his aura and give him back both of them.
Yeah, because odds are, they're like you were saying, they're going to have the aura to play on a better creature than the one they initially had. That was kind of the problem I was seeing with it. But, again, it's still a bounce spell. It makes blue-black control a lot more viable. It's still really strong. I think I ended up playing like blue-white with that and, you know, some of the heroic stuff. It was really strong. The blue-white gets, or rather just white again, white being so stupid good in this new set. The Nyx Fleece Ram, the 2-mana 0/5 that...
Oh my god, that thing single-handedly defeated me so many times over the...
Card is
over
so,
the course of the few days.
So good in limited.
It is.
It is an enchantment, though, which brings up a point where...
Well, it's good and bad in this format.
Yeah. So I know initially in Born of the Gods, if you had enchantment removal, or rather even way back in Theros when you had enchantment removal, you kind of wanted to think about putting it in your main deck when you were playing limited. I think in Born of the Gods that got a little bit stronger, and definitely in this set now, you definitely want at least one, maybe two... you know, if not in the main, you want a lot in the board because there are so many enchantments that are super problematic. This being one of them. This I've had players use this against me, and it just sits there. It's not going to die because it's going to be tough to kill it with the 5 toughness, especially with the, you know, very limited removal in the format as it was. It's just a brick wall. It's really good.
This card is ridiculous. I've had to kill it many a time. Use various removal spells on it, yeah, so...
And it feels so
and
bad.
And people, please, please play your enchantment removal main deck.
Yeah.
Please.
There's no reason
to have that in the sideboard.
You'll thank us later. Trust us.
Yeah. Like, I had a conversation about this with someone the other day. Like, I started playing enchantment at least one, maybe, you know, pretty much one since Born of the Gods. Like, there's enough targets with bestow and all that stuff before, and then like if someone ends up getting a god weapon and you have no out to it, it's pretty much game over. So like I started always having at least one somewhere in there to have an out, and there was always enough targets for it.
Well, you know, just
I had like a broken deck where like I just had no room for any, you know, removal spell. But in this format, the like half the creatures, the new creatures we got are enchantments. You know, a decent amount from Born of the Gods were enchantment creatures, and you had all the, you know, heavy bestow creatures from the first set. Just play it. It's your enchant removal basically reads as just destroy target creature 9 times out of 10 almost. It's ridiculous. Play it.
And the times
don't leave their stuff on the sideboard.
And the times when it's not removing a creature, it's going to be removing something that's really problematic. Like Jamie said, the god weapons, especially the white one, Spear of Heliod, that if your opponent plays that against you and is smart about using the activation and even just the 1/1 from it in creature, you know, battles, that card can completely ruin a game. And not just the old ones, but the new ones. I know, I believe it's Thassa's Ire, the 1-mana blue enchantment that lets you tap or untap things for, I think, 4.
That one's not good.
Card's really good when you have a deck that works with it.
That card is not good.
Yeah, I have no problem.
I dislike that card. I have not had any trouble playing around that card.
No, I had just a deck full of big creatures when I went up against it, so.
I had somebody who had Krufix in a deck with it, and the ability to have extra mana to fuel this was bonkers.
All right, so, I'll agree that sounds absolutely horrible to play against.
Yeah, because Krufix is the one that lets you just bank mana, right?
Yeah.
Allows you to bank colorless mana, but it only takes 1 blue to do the activation, so it's not that hard to tap a couple islands and tap some stuff down. Yeah, but assuming you don't have a mana sink, Thassa's Ire is, I haven't been impressed with it. It's a little bit too slow. I mean, if you're behind, you're just never going to get back in the game wasting 4 mana a turn to just take out their best creature.
It gives them time to, like in one of my games last week, I had that against me, and honestly, he ended up with the choice of whether or not to tap down my dragon or my 7/7 double striker. So
I want to bring up real quick before we start moving into the next thing, Scryfish.
I am in love with Scryfish.
Scryfish is freaking OP as hell.
See, this is just a quick aside. This is why I don't understand how you think green is so good now for it. Just every blue and white card in the new set is just infinitely ridiculous, especially Scryfish.
A Crow and Mastiff.
I don't see how you cannot play blue and white just all the time.
I'm not opposed to playing green-blue. I love Scryfish. Green-blue is awesome.
So for those not aware, Scryfish is an 0/3 starfish for 1 and a blue. It lets you tap to scry, which is really boring, but it's super good. If you play that on turn 2, kind of the same thing as the ram, it's going to be blocking a lot of things, especially early in the game in a blue deck that needs to control the game a little bit more. You're going to be able to block. And then even if they try and kill it, you can get scries out of it. I had one
Let's be honest here, though. He's not blocking that much. No. That's one problem with the Starfish. His 0/3 is actually really underpowered in this format.
But not really early. Like, really early holding off some of the super aggressive decks.
I often did not block my opponent's creatures when they had untapped mana, just because in case they played a trick to kill my Starfish, I did not want to trade my Starfish for a trick. I was like, I want the scries.
I had one game where an opponent put an Oppressive Raise on my Starfish. Oppressive Raise is kind of the passivism effect. It's 1 white, and then for the creature to attack or block or use its activated abilities, you have to pay 3 mana. So I was paying 3 mana a turn to use Starfish or Scryfish's ability, and it was still great. Like, late game, I was not, you know, having anything else to do with the mana. So even, you know, it reading 0/3 for 2 mana, pay 3 mana, tap and scry 1, that still was super good, especially in limited when you can do it every turn and you can filter your lands, you can filter through, you know, cards you don't need in certain matchups. It's really strong. I really enjoyed Scryfish. I had 2-1 round and it was bonkers.
Limited is won by, like, in three different ways. One, having more action than your opponent. And when you have to play, like, 17 lands in a 40-card deck, there's an easy chance to flood out. Or miss your land drops even, too, sometimes. Scryfish helps there. Another way, get your bombs. Scryfish will find them. He knows where they are. Third way, removal when you need it. And again, Scryfish will get you to the exact type of removal you need in the situation, which is very important, especially in the current limited when, like John was saying, like it's not that we have a very limited amount of removal now. We have tons of removal. It's just they're all very conditional. Like right. There's not many things that say destroy target creature. They all have conditions on it, like target enchantment, target enchanted creature, target enchantment creature. You know, all these weird rules are only like -2/-2 or -4/-4. So you got to find the right removal for the right situation, and Scryfish helps with that. This guy is an all-star. I love him.
He called it an all-star.
Starfish calls. He wants his royalty check. Oh, yeah, but I love Scryfish. And, like, when you're done with him, he just chump blocks something and saves your life.
So I think that's going to lead into the next thing. So, like we were saying, we've played a ton of limited so far between the pre-release and then the release. We have one of our prize packs that we're going to open up, and we're going to do a pack one, pick one really quick. So let me get that real quick. That's fake. That's fake card noise. That's actually real cards, but fake opening a pack noise. Let's see behind the curtain a bit. So let me open this pack and read these cards off really quick. So we've got Lightning Diadem, which is a +2/+2 and deals damage to a creature or a player for 6. It's an enchantment. That card's bad. Eagle of the Watch, 2/1 Flying Vigilance for 3 in white. Market Festival is a 4-mana enchantment that you put on a land that lets it add 2 extra mana. You've got Grim Guardian, which is 2 and a black for a 1/4 with Constellation, and the Constellation reads that your opponent loses 1 life. That one's not bad. You've got Cloaked Siren, 3 and a blue for a 3/2 Flash Flyer. Reskos Swiftclaw, 1 and a white for a 3/1. Triton Shorestalker, which is a 1/1 for 1 blue. Not 1 blue, but just a single blue, and it cannot be blocked. Then you've got the Ravenous Thingamadoo. We don't know how to pronounce this, but it's a 2/4 Vigilance for 3 and a green. It has Monstrosity 3 for 6 and a green. Next up, we've got Font of Ire, 1 and a red enchantment that kind of sits in play. And its ability is 3 and a red. Sack it to deal 5 damage to a player. Next up, Aspect of Gorgon, which is +1/+3 and Death Touch for 2 and a black. Then Solidarity of Heroes, which is our first Strive card, I believe. It is 1 and a green, and then the Strive cost is 1 and a green, and it doubles the +1 counters on any number of target creatures. Next up, we have Disciple of Deceit, a 1/3 blue black. And it has an inspired trigger that you may discard a non-land card to search for the same converted mana cost and put that into your hand from your deck. Then Whitewater Naiads, which is a 4/4 for 3 and blue-blue. It has a constellation trigger that target creature cannot block. And then the rare is Polymorphous Rush, which is 2 and a blue, Strive of 1 and a blue. Choose a creature on the battlefield, and then target creatures become a copy of that until EOT. So that's the pack. Nothing super interesting in it. It's kind of boring. The rare's kind of eh. It can be really, really strong. I've gotten blown out by that card. But Jamie, what do you think out of this pack?
I'm considering 4 cards. But for me, it's really down to 2. as I was talking about, blue and white seem much more powerful in this set than ever before. So I'm really looking at the two blue cards. We have the Cloak Siren. This is the horsefish always wanted to be, what you really wanted out of your horsefish. One blue and three for a flash flyer, 3/2. I had a lot of success with this guy. He was the win condition in one of my decks, literally. This is how I won every game. But you've got the Naiads too, which are just 5 mana. You get a 4/4 instead of a 3/2. You lose the flash. You don't really have the flying, but you have pseudo flying and the ability to make one creature not block. Oh, this is a tough one. I can't decide. The Whitewater Naiads are probably a little bit better because you can continuously use their ability. But at the same time, they don't have evasion at all times like the Siren does. I'm really torn between these two.
Yeah, my first thought is the Naiads, the 4/4s. It's a pretty strong creature on its own, especially in blue.
I feel like it makes you want to play enchantment creatures or enchantments more.
Yeah,
how often you really get those in blue-white.
Hypnotic Siren.
Yeah, it depends how many, though, enchantments you have in that deck, though, I think. If you only have a couple of it, I think I'd rather play the Flash Siren than the Whitewater ones. But if you have
I really like the Cloak Siren better, just because like it's one blue too, so it doesn't
lock you into a color.
I don't know. I just like the ability to have flying all the time, and Flash allows you to like almost play it with haste and keep mana up to do other things. I don't know. I've been really impressed by Cloak Siren. Like I said, he was a win condition in one of my decks where literally it was the only way I could kill people. And he did so amazingly.
I mean, I like Cloak Siren, though. I'd probably also pick Polymorphous Rush.
Card's fun.
It's just fun.
It's fun, but it's too conditional for me. But it like John said, it could be powerful in the right situation.
It's not just your... The creatures, you have to make a copy of a creature you control. If your opponent plays a big thing and attacks with it once, but then leaves nothing behind,
remember three copies. Format, like making a copy of a creature is not all it's cracked up to be, because you're like building your own monsters by bestowing. You don't get their enchantments.
No.
And you're building your own monsters by monstrousing. You don't get their counters. You just get the printed creature.
But it doesn't matter if they put an Arbor Colossus down and attack with it, and then you make 4 copies of the Arbor Colossus on your turn and attack with all 4 of them.
Again, your opponent has to have an Arbor Colossus. It's conditional. But I see how it can be very powerful. It's a high-risk, high-reward card. Like, sometimes it's going to sit in your hand, and your opponent's going to have an army of, like, frightened Shorestalkers, and you make 4 of them, and you're like, yeah, I can do 4 damage.
Yeah, but why would you use it on that? You don't want to use it on that. You want to use it either on...
If you're going to die.
It does trigger heroic in some weird way that could be used in the blue-white, heroic strategy of you're probably still going to be getting a 1-1 if you target one of these white heroic or even the green heroic creatures. It's going to get the counters on it, and then you can, kind of build your own creature in a way. So say they've got a creature that has trample or something, even if it's not too big, you copy the creature with trample, trigger your heroic, get the 1/1s on it, and then you've got a bigger trampler than they have. It has too many edge cases.
Extremely powerful. It's extremely powerful. Yeah, I think it's a very powerful card. It just requires sometimes the right situation to use it properly.
Right, but I mean, this is your first pack, first pick, so you take it first and then you just pick up a lot of big creatures that you don't mind turning your guys into later.
Yeah, but it's a fine first pick.
I totally understand it's a fine first pick. I just like the more solid... I like a solid deck. Like, I try to stay away from these type of cards and go with the solid Cloak Siren and build, like, a flyer deck around it.
I am looking more and more at the Eagle of the Watch.
It's a solid flyer, but it's nowhere near the other cards.
It's not the Cloak Siren. Like, of course, I'm going to take the Cloak Siren over the Eagle and hope the Eagle comes back around for my blue-white flyer deck. But, I don't know. I've been impressed with Eagle.
The Eagle's really good. The Eagle's a solid flyer, but he's not something you're picking up in your first couple picks.
What about Grim Guardian? The 3-mana 1/4 constellation, your opponent loses a life. Blue-black control is a little bit better with this new set.
That do well in duplicates. I've seen that kind of go.
It's really good in black-white, too. Black-white is a solid color combination for this guy.
Yeah.
I got beat by this guy. He's really, really good, actually. He was one of the ones I was considering. Like, he's a solid blocker, and, like, he makes all your things, like, deal damage. He's really good.
I would consider taking him. That would be... I think it's between him, the Naiads, and then the Cloak Siren, to be honest.
I also think the green card is really good, too.
Which one? The one that... doubles tokens
or counters? The 4-mana for 2/4 vigilance. Yeah. I think that's a solid body, and it has the ability to get quite big and out of hand.
I think
it's really good in a green deck.
It'll probably table though.
I don't think it shouldn't be tabling, but I think I'd rather have the flyers here. But if you really like green, that is the only good green card in this pack. It might be a consideration. Let people fight over those three potentially first pickable blue cards.
You could take the Market Festival and then go 5-color green from the start.
Yeah, take fire that and then hope
that. Yeah, we're supposed to be giving solid advice here, people.
Solid advice. No, don't play limited.
Signal, Grim Guardian and the Green Vigilance Monster are by themselves as like the only good cards in those colors. So they might be a good choice if you wanted to avoid the blue. But I just think blue is so powerful. Even when people are fighting over it now, like my blue-white deck I got in the triple draft, like people were playing blue and white around the table, and I still got a really, really powerful blue-white deck. I think blue and white are just so deep now with all three packs together. Green's pretty good too. I think green is powerful, but I think it's less powerful now that you have less Nessie and Asps to open up.
So Ford, what are you taking? What's your pick?
Polymorphous Rush. I'm going to stick with fun.
Jamie?
Give me the Cloak Siren. Maybe it's supposed to be the Naiads, but I think I like the Siren better.
I think I'm going to take the Naiads. I like the Constellation Trigger that it has.
It's got a really powerful Constellation Trigger. I want to play with it to see how often it's just like making one creature can't block is not that great versus how many times it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's very close for me, like I said. I'm erring on the Cloak Siren because it's a known commodity to me. I've had a lot of success with him.
Does anybody else have any more stuff for Journey into
the Depths? I have a fun story about me and Ford's game. No.
Let's not tell that story. Let's save that story for a time when Ford's not here.
Okay. Well, you're here every week, Ford.
Fine, go ahead.
I thought Ford's dead. I thought you're Brad now. So I played Ford, and Brad's here to...
I thought I was Francis.
Hey, if you want to bring that back up, we got Tucson here. I'm sure he'll go to town with that. It's better than a truck, I guess. So we were playing, and I had a blue-black control deck with 2 Scryfish in it, but that wasn't the part of the story. No. I just wanted to talk about how awesome Scryfish is.
Was this my Hydra Tribal deck that I was playing against you?
Yeah, this is the Hybrid Hydra. You did run over me quite convincingly in game one by playing the Dictate of Erebos. That is a hard card to keep up with. it's a flash enchantment that says whenever one of your creatures dies, your opponent must sack a creature. Oh, good lord. And my deck was, like, literally just a removal deck. So I'm constantly trying to kill his creatures, and I'm just killing my own creatures at the same time, and his creatures were bigger than mine. It was horrible that game when he got it out.
Yep.
That's not the story. So this blue-black control deck was a little weird because it was an inspired deck. I had one Springleaf Drum and a couple cool inspired guys. I had the 1/3 guy we talked about that searches up things. He was kind of fun. Because I usually discarded a 3-drop to go find my hero's downfall to kill whatever I wanted. That part was fun. But I also had the Daring Thief, which is a 2/3 creature with an inspired trigger that when you untap with him, you get to basically exchange control of one card of yours with one card of your opponent's that shares a type. So Ford played the Trojan Horse and gave it to me, so it's making him little soldiers, and he's chump blocking all my little dudes until I find the daring thief. So I tap it with the springleaf drum, untap, exchange my horse he gave me, which is making him tokens, for his 8/8 giant monstrosity creature.
And then you get tokens every turn, too.
So now I'm getting tokens, and I have his 8/8. It was an amazing play, and all thanks to Daring Thief. Daring Thief is awesome, but he's really hard to get going. The Springleaf Drum helps a lot. There's also the 05 Black Wall from Journey. I didn't have that, but that's another, not Journey, Born into Gods. There's some sort of tree trunk thing that you can tap creatures with.
Orisk of something.
Yeah, so there are a few ways to tap him, but at 2/3, like, it's hard to kind of swing in with him without playing tricks on him. And you don't really want to waste your God's willing to kind of attack with him and get an untapped trigger. Of course, when it steals something that's going to win you the game, of course you're going to do it anyways. But it's just, he's not that exciting most of the time, but he's a fun card. He's kind of like Polymorphous Rush. He's really, really fun and can do some powerful things. I remember at one point I exchanged my Springleaf Drum for a Chariot. The one that gives first strike, trample, and whatever.
Haste.
So I was like suiting up my guys with a stolen chariot. That was kind of neat. You know, he does some fun things, but that was a really fun story because that's like one of the most fun things to give back to your opponent. Here, have your Trojan horse back.
Regifting.
Regifting. It's not just for fruitcake elementals.
Ford, do you have anything else to add?
No, I pretty much got my ass handed to me during the pre-release, as Jamie pointed out. I didn't start, so I don't have really any interesting stories besides from me getting crushed a lot.
Supply line cranes. More awesome white cards.
Yeah, white's really good. I think that's kind of our last thing. It's just white's really strong.
Armorman of Nyx. Really, really good removal or just kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Stonewise Front Fortifier. Blocks for days.
A Crowan Mastiff.
Not as good as I was expecting him to be. 4 mana is a lot, but he's still a solid creature.
Still solid, can take
Reprisal,
down.
Reprisal, destroy target monster.
Deicide, ruin target player's day.
No, I do have one story. Hold on, it's.
I love excitement.
I just remembered it was the one good play I had. It was the Riptide Chimera and Banishing Light. And basically, with that combo, you can just keep upgrading your Banishing Light all day. Just keep returning it to your hand off the Riptide Chimera. And just saying, oh, you heroic that, I'll O-ring that. Oh, you're trying to monstrous that, I'll O-ring that. Oh, you bestowed that there, I'll O-ring that. I did that a couple times. That was my one good thing for the pre-release weekend. I was more exciting than that sounds, but that's just because my pre-release was that bad for my play experience.
That card is really weird. Like, it's really, really good when it's good, and then it's really, really horrible when it's bad. But, like, there's a lot of neat things you can bounce and continuously play with that. That's fun.
If you get some sheep heroic thing, it's good with that also.
It's another way to abuse the blue draw card thing instead of the stupid Floodtide Serpent, who's not very good. But, yeah. Blue also got some awesome cards, like Warwing Siren.
The Chimera itself, the Riptide Chimera itself, is also an enchantment. So, right, like, worst-case scenario, you can use that to trigger your Constellation on your Naiads that we were talking about.
Right, yes. Yeah. But that's why that card is sometimes, like, the worst, because you're like, hey, he's my only enchantment, and I can play him as a blocker for a turn every turn. Yay. So, like, but when he's good, he's really good, usually. Like, you're bouncing something ridiculous.
If you get him, like, on turn 3 and can actually return, like, a cheap 1-mana or 2-mana enchantment.
That's another way to use your first turn Hypnotic Siren. Just beat their face and then return it and steal something.
You can do that. I was just talking about just putting one of the fonts down on the field early.
Yeah, anything just to keep him in play so you can beat. But I was just, I wanted to give John some credit for his idea of playing it early.
Oh, okay.
Trying to help out a teammate.
Yeah.
But that thing is ridiculous. I had that in a pre-release, just stealing creatures. Control Magic has always been busted, no matter what the cost is.
I was about to say the one that could flip. It didn't really work out that well.
Could flip.
The morph one?
Yeah, not Morph. There wasn't it an Innistrad? There was...
Oh, the Innistrad one. No, no, there was... The Innistrad one was really bad. That was, like, gain control of target creature equal to, like, the power of it or something. Like...
Oh, that you're thinking.
And there was the flip one too. There was like a ghost flippy thing. I remember the ghost. Yeah, I don't remember how it worked, but that one wasn't very good either.
You were
I meant like cost wise. Like if it says 7 and gain control of target creature, it's still good.
Yeah, probably.
Limited.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's just.
All right. I think we've talked about this long enough. What else is on the agenda, John?
That's about it. That wraps it up.
Oh. Oh really?
Yeah, it's been about an hour.
Yeah, it's been. Been about an hour. We've been going nice.
Okay.
Nice timing.
Okay.
So yeah. Yes. Do you want to do the outro? I mean, I can do it if you don't want to. It's fine. I can.
Well, I'd have to read it like an idiot.
Thanks for making me read, but that's okay because I'm pretty fluent at reading.
Famous. No way. You totally got this memorized. Don't give away your secrets. By the way, all you people out there, don't come to Victory and draft blue white. You now know my secret. So. Like, it's not fair.
It's okay.
Probably draft red. Red is usually pretty open.
Red is always open.
Well, I think that wraps it up for us tonight. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. As usual, you can email us any questions, comments, concerns to our team email address at coalitionvictorymtg@gmail.com. That's the name of the show, followed by mtg@gmail.com. You can follow our team on Twitter at VictoryCast. I know we were tweeting during the pre-release. I got a good picture of the whole team, picture of Jamie with his God pack and stuff. I got that stuff onto the Twitter, which was kind of fun. So look for the Twitter to be a little bit more active if we start going to some more tournaments and stuff.
Yeah.
It's time to grind the IQs.
Yes, it'll be active this weekend for me just because I'll be doing the online stuff, so I'll take some screenshots of interesting board states for everyone. Yep. Put them up there.
And we have not been streaming. I've been super lazy on that. I've thought about getting back into Modern and streaming Affinity to kind of get back to that, but haven't done that. So I'll put all that stuff in the show notes as usual. Thanks again to the co-host for helping out tonight. Thanks to you guys for listening. And we should be back to our normal schedule now. We should be back on our weekly basis thing. We were all kind of busy with a bunch of stuff, so we took a week or two off. But we're back, so don't worry. It's okay.
We're here.
We're here.
We're here for you.
Is that a train? Do I hear a train? We can end it with
that
a train.
That is, in fact, a train.
All right.
I see the red lights from my window.
All right. Well, we will end it before the train gets here. Thanks again, guys. Have a good week.
Night, everybody.
Choo-choo. Well, it's a dog lizard.
A hyena.
Or maybe a dog goat.